You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, this is Tim Rice. Welcome to episode 14 of Get On To My Cloud. By early 1977, the album, or LP, long playing record, that Andrew and I had made of Evita had been very successful in the United Kingdom and elsewhere, and the single of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina by Julie Covington, even more so. As our Jesus Christ Superstar album had been so successful in the United States 7 years before, leading to a Broadway show, we hoped for a repeat in America. This did not happen. The US promotional campaign for the Evita studio album was an absolute disaster. No one in the American record company seemed to have a clue about the concept, or about what we were trying to do, or about Eva Peron, or even much of a clue about us. The contrast between MCA in 1970 and 1977, at least as far as we were concerned, could not have been more marked. Musical chairs were a bigger feature than usual of the music business in the 70s in the US, with top executives coming and going almost as quickly as many of their recording artists. Virtually all of the MCA Records team in America who delivered Superstar so brilliantly had departed, and none of the new top bananas had been around in those far-off Superstar days. When we went over there in 1970, as complete unknowns, we were nevertheless treated like Led Zeppelin from the moment an MCA limo met us at JFK. This time around, as we lurched through a few second-division radio stations in various cities, not even treated a first-class travel, we were lucky to be met at all at an airport or station, and if we were, it was usually by some harassed salesman in his beat-up station wagon. We quickly deduced that Evita was not a major part of MCA's 1977 game plan. The overall cock-up was perfectly illustrated by their release of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, the single, on the label of which they billed the artist as, quote, Evita featuring Julie Covington, unquote, thinking that Evita was the name of some English band we dug up to record our song. We didn't get particularly bad press or reviews. It was worse than that. We got virtually no reviews. And nearly all radio stations were distinctly underwhelmed. I felt that the only reason MCA had even issued the Evita album in the States was that they'd look pretty stupid if those two weird English guys who'd had a hit with Jesus a few years back had another hit with this Eva Peron lady on another label. But because things were going so well at home, we didn't let it get us down. Huge interest was building up. As I'd suspected, Eva Peron herself was becoming a star with almost as many pieces about her, fashion, historical, political, appearing in all parts of the media, as there were articles about our show, or rather, proposed show, because we hadn't begun to put it together yet. We were pretty confident that Robert Stigwood, who owned our management company, would want to produce the show, even though we currently lacked virtually every other piece of the jigsaw. Andrew's most significant contribution to the business end of Evita had been to send not-quite-finished tapes of the album to Hal Prince in America. Robert and we readily agreed that he would be the dream director, though surely unlikely to take the job, being Broadway's most celebrated musical figure, then working on Sweeney Todd, one of a string of Stephen Sondheim shows he'd directed, all to sensational critical reaction. Why would he leave his home patch and work in London with two Brits, who were not yet established in the theatre, or certainly not established in New York theatre? The answer was that Hal liked the work. He sent Andrew a 3-page response a full 3 months before the album was officially released, apparently after just one hearing. It's a fascinating document, at least if you're interested in musicals in general and our stuff in particular. And it's worth quoting at some length. I will not attempt an American accent. Here's Hal's letter. I tried to include everything that occurs to me without regard for your feelings. Overall, I think it's a fascinating project. You fellows deal in size, and I admire that. Before I get into individual scenes, numbers, and lyrics, I'd like to say I had a feeling, which grew, that something's missing in the second act, that fate intervenes and levels Evita rather than instruments of her own doing. You touch on growing disillusionment within the government, but you don't describe it theatrically. There's no confrontation in which Evita and Perón accelerate their own downfall. The first act is structured so well that I found myself considering eliminating the intermission, which is a cop-out. And then I realized what I was missing in the structure of the second act. It's all in number 16, and the money kept rolling in, and probably should be solved there. The opening is dazzling. I'm crazy about the idea of Che functioning in the piece, but I think, again for the stage, he should be much cooler, loose, and cynically humorous. If he is to be strident, it should be after the waltz, after he is politicized. The funeral is brilliant, as is Magaldi's song. So far, I was really enjoying this letter. I always thought that a movie in a Buenos Aires cinema, being interrupted by the announcement of Ava's death, followed by Andrew's majestic, almost overwhelming interpretation of Ava's funeral, and then Che's vicious, and I hoped witty put down of Ava and her weeping millions, was a pretty strong start to the show, which clearly had stirred Hal's creative juices. However, I didn't think ditching the intermission would have gone down well with theatre owners, who would not be thrilled to miss 20 minutes of flat-out bar takings. Back to the letter in a minute, but jumping ahead to the eventual London production, here is the great David Essex, my favourite Che, commentating on Ava's extravagant funeral. Oh, what a circus.
Oh, what a circus, oh, what a show. Argentina has gone to town over the death of an actress called Ava Perón. We've all gone crazy, mourning all day and mourning all night, falling over ourselves to get all of the misery right. Oh, what an exit, that's how to go, when they're ringing your curtain down. Demand to be buried like Ava Perón. It's quite a sunset and good for the country. In a roundabout way, we've made the front pages of all the world's papers today. But who is this Santa Evita? Why all this howling, hysterical sorrow? What kind of goddess has lived among us? How will we ever get by without her? She had her moments, she had some style. The best show in town was the crowd outside the Casa Rosada, crying Ava Perón. But that's all gone now. As soon as the smoke from the funeral clears, we're all gonna see and how she did nothing for years. Supposed to have been immortal. That's all they wanted, not much to ask for. But in the end you could not deliver. Sing you fools, but you got it wrong. Enjoy your prayers, but you haven't got long. Queen is dead, your king is through. She is not coming back to you. Show business kept us all alive since 17 October 1945. But the star is gone, glam is worn thin. That's a pretty bad state for a state to be in. Instead of government, we had a stage. Instead of ideals, a prima donna's rage. Instead of help, we were given a crowd. She didn't say much, but she said it loud. Sing, you fools, but you got it wrong. Enjoy your prayers, but you haven't got love. You're
David Essex, Oh What a Circus. Those were the first words I wrote to that great tune, which is most famous, of course, as Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. David Essex had a big hit record with Oh What a Circus via a great pop version produced by Mike Batt.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Back to Hal's epistle. I think Che is too British. I think some of his recitative is corny, quite frankly, below the rest of the material. I don't get a clear character, as I do of Ava and Perron, and of some of the minor characters. My thoughts there were, For Hal then went on to criticise The Lady's Got Potential and Dangerous Jade. But he was back with full praise for I'd Be Surprisingly Good for You and Another Suitcase in Another Hall. As he put it, I like Ava's seduction of Perron and the scene that follows with his mistress. I think it will work well on stage. The last scene in Act One is marvellous. Some of Hal's other thoughts. I don't think The Aristocrats are written as ingeniously, either musically or lyrically, as they should be. In Rainbow High, I do not like the reference to Lauren Bacall, principally because it distracts. Much as I like the waltz, there are some words which I do not like, such as, so why go bananas chasing nirvanas? I think it distracts because it's not up to quality. Hal had several other pertinent comments, after just one hearing, remember, and many of his suggestions were carried out, though Lauren Bacall survived, just as well, because she came to the opening night in New York in 1979 and got one of the biggest cheers of the night. Bananas and nirvanas hung in there for London, but got the chop for New York. The song in which Ava seduces the would-be president is, of course, I'd Be Surprisingly Good for You. No changes were required there, I'm relieved to say. Here are Elaine Page and Joss Ackland.
It seems crazy, but you must believe there's nothing calculated, nothing planned. Please forgive me if I seem naive. I would never want to force your hand, but please understand I'd be good for you. I don't always rush in like this, 20 seconds after saying hello, telling strangers I'm too good to miss. If I'm wrong, I hope you'll tell me so, but you really should know I'd be good for you. I'd be surprisingly good for you. I won't go on if I'm boring you, but do you understand my point of view? Do you like what you hear, what you see, and would you be good for me too? I'm not talking of a hurried night, a frantic tumble, then a shy goodbye, creeping home before it gets too light. That's not the reason that I caught your eye, which has to imply I'd be good for you. I'd be surprisingly good for you.
call me. I can understand you perfectly, and I like what I hear, what I see, and knowing me, I would be good for you too.
I'm not talking of a hurried night, a frantic tumble, then a shy goodbye, creeping home before it gets too light. That's not the reason that I caught your eye, which has to imply I'd be good for you. I'd be surprisingly good for you.
I'd be surprisingly good for you, Elaine Page and Joss Aklan from the London original cast recording. Hal finished his lengthy and by and large very encouraging letter by saying, "In summing up, I think the style of the piece should be abrasive, simple, raw is probably a better word, contemporary Brecht, bold. Best to you both, Hal. P.S. Tim, I wish I'd met you. It might make some of these criticisms easier to take in a more personal context." Andrew and I then rather rudely all but ignored Hal's words of wisdom, occupied as we were with the final stages of the record album's launch. Then there was Christmas. Then we began to hit the charts. Then we got to number one. Then we thought, shouldn't we have got back in touch with Hal Prince? We came down to earth, worrying about whether the great American was still remotely interested. After all, his letter had been written 6 months previously. But the great man was still interested. The only snag being that he was not available for a while. We had to pencil in summer 1978 for the London opening. This would, however, give us plenty of time to get everything right, we hoped. The story of how we did at least get enough things right to make the piece work on stage will probably have to be a whole new podcast. I think podcast number 41, slot, is free. But this time around, I've already played extracts from the eventual London show, which demonstrate that we certainly got the casting right. David Essex as Che, Joss Aklan as Perron, and the then comparatively unknown Elaine Page as Ava. One of the lesser-known numbers, which Hal was quite happy with, was entitled She is a Diamond, in which Perron attempts to justify Ava's position and influence in the government to his military colleagues, whose disillusionment with both Perrons is becoming more and more of a threat to them. It wasn't going to end well. Here is Joss Aklan again.
But on the other hand, she's all they have. She is a diamond in their dull grey lives, and that's the hardest kind of storm it usually survives. And when you think about it, can you recall the last time they loved anyone at all? She's not a bauble you can brush aside. She's been out doing what we just talked about. Example, gave us back our businesses, got the English out. And if you think about it, well, why not do one or two of the things we promised to? But on the other hand, she's slowing down. She's lost a little of that magic drive, but I would not advise those critics present to derive any satisfaction from her fading star. She's the one who's kept us where we are.
Although Hal had committed to directing the show, which was very exciting news, we still had a long way to go before we got to the stage of mounting the first ever production of Evita, which eventually featured the recordings I've just played in this podcast. We had a lot of ups and downs, casting crises, struggles with the press, and the inevitable confusion and panic that precedes any major West End opening, particularly a major musical. All this was waiting for us along the road. That was episode 14 of Tim Rice's podcast, Get Onto My Cloud, presented and written by me, Tim Rice, and produced by Peter Hobbs.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.